AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They called me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. This is part two of what may well be a continuing series. We recently had a great piece of correspondence from fellow conspiracy realist who asked about the world's most dangerous prisoners, which led to a far-reaching conversation in part one, where we asked for your help, fellow listeners. And in that episode, we threw a little bit of a curveball at the very end. We talked about terrorists. We talked about supervillain level folks like Ted Kaczynski, also called the Unabomber. We talked about, frankly, the nature of humanity toward the end, but we teased something. We said, how do you define dangerous? You know, I mean, I think when most people think of something or an individual or criminal as being dangerous, you think of stuff like a serial killer, a terrorist, a serial assaulter, an arsonist, you know, someone with perhaps tremendous mental issues, right? Or perhaps someone who is simply evil. But as it turns out, for the powers that be, authoritarian governments, military regimes, so on, the folks they consider the most dangerous are often not considered a threat due to violent activities, but instead for their revolutionary ideas. Here are the facts.
The U.S. Department of State estimates that there are, quote, currently more than a million political prisoners around the world. So what are we talking about when we say political prisoners?
Political prisoners.
You've heard the phrase before. You've heard it applied to journalists. You've heard it applied to rival politicians. You've heard people in the United States prison system describe themselves as political prisoners. I'm thinking of folks like Mumia Abu-Jamal. The international community considers political prisoners to be people who are held without just cause, often because they exercised what they consider basic human rights, freedom of expression, peaceful protest, stuff like that. They're not trying to, you know, burn down the capital of their country, but they are trying to protest peacefully in front of it. Maybe they defended the rights of others.
Yeah. Or maybe they published a whole expose about a multi-billion dollar estate that Putin owns.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, boy. And they may have organized an opposition party. Or like you said, they may have reported on abuse or corruption. They may have been saying some of the things that the people in power would rather the public not know. And for most of us listening today, those things that we named are not a reason to lock somebody up, right? Or to sentence them to a gulag or the horrors of the local prison system. But it gets worse. It gets way worse in places like the DPRK, North Korea, they call it here. You can be considered dangerous, not due to your activities, but due to the activities of a family member up to the third generation. You are guilty by association and off to the camps you go. And then places like China, you know, not to pick on East Asia here, but in China, your ethnicity may put you under suspicion of the surveillance state, right? You're a little too into the idea of an independent Tibet, right? Or in the case of the Uyghurs in Western China and Xinjiang.
Or you may have been a Japanese American during World War II in the Pacific conflict.
Right. Again, not a glass house, a glass planet. And people can also be imprisoned for dangerous religious beliefs. We're not just talking about extremist demagogues or cult leaders like Charles Manson, who actually, you know, sent folks to kill people. We're talking about people who are just following their own belief system in parts of the world where unapproved religions are seen as threats to national security or stability. I mean, recently, like in the past, we did an episode on Shen Yun and Falun Gong, and we also did another episode on it quite recently in Ridiculous History. And Falun Gong is a dangerous religion to follow, or a dangerous belief system to follow in mainland China.
So when you say dangerous, Ben, what are we talking about here? What makes these folks and their ideas such a threat that they would be deemed dangerous?
It's weird, man. It's kind of a your mileage may vary situation, isn't it? That you will be seen as a source of potential chaos, right? One of my old professors, who was a Chinese national and then taught at West Point for many years before he went to some other institutions, he was very clear in saying that that the struggle of the PRC right now, and the Communist Party of China, is to maintain cohesion, right? To maintain stability. And it's something that the Middle Kingdom has struggled with historically over thousands of years. So anything that could be seen as supplanting that or leading to a secessionist activity is clamped down aggressively, zealously. And again, you know, no country is really immune to secessionist activity. It's funny, this statistic doesn't get bandied about too often, but you would be surprised to learn, maybe if you live in the U.S., that at any given time, there's something like 100 to 200 groups that consider themselves secessionist. We've got one, we had one at least here in Stuff They Don't Want You to Know's home state of Georgia, calling itself the Sovereign State of Georgia. And we talked about on the show, they print their own license plates. They got these little signs on their houses that say, like, you can't enter here if you're an agent of the U.S. This is sovereign territory. And unfortunately, as these groups often learn in a court of law, putting up the sign doesn't help. It's like when people put that post on Facebook that said, hey, by posting this, I'm saying Facebook can't do anything with my data. I don't think that kept Mark Zuckerberg up at night.
Mm-mm. I don't know what keeps that guy up at night. Maybe the future of the metaverse, Brad.
There was a sovereign citizen or a man claiming to be a sovereign citizen who was recently, he just got sentenced. He struck a bunch of people with his vehicle and he just got sentenced. It was, oh gosh, what's his name? Is it Daryl Brooks? Is that correct?
Daryl Brooks. This is news to me, Matt.
Just one of those parade crasher guys.
It was a parade crasher. Yeah. And throughout the entire process of being in trial, he was basically saying, you have no jurisdiction over me for various reasons, kind of gumming up the works of the trial. And he just got sentenced to like a crap ton of years in prison. I think it's like six life sentences or something.
Oh, I'm just reading about this now. How did I miss this? Daryl Brooks. Christmas parade attack. Yeah, sovereign citizen is something that people will bring up. And many people who have used that defense in the U.S. prison system will go on to portray themselves as political prisoners, right? But in the larger case of people who are considered dangerous because of their ideologies, these folks are not necessarily hoodlums, ne'er-do-wells. You know, they're not out bombing parades or markets. They're not out hijacking airplanes or assaulting people. From their perspective, they're fighting for what they see as basic human rights, the right to free speech, right? The right to exist as an LGBTQ person, the right to follow a religion or belief set of their own choosing without being blackbagged for it. In some parts of the world, these things are treated as serious crimes. We'll pause for a word from our sponsor and learn more about why these people are considered dangerous.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Here's where it gets crazy. So, like, to your point, Noel, these folks we're going to talk about have one thing in common. Their ideas are the primary reason that they are locked up. They didn't shoot anybody. They didn't rob anybody. They came out and said, hey, I think this politician is corrupt. Or, hey, I feel like we shouldn't stone people to death. Stuff like that. And maybe we start with one of the first examples from the government of South Sudan. This guy, Peter Bayar Ajak, is out now. But from 2018 to 2020, this economist and peace activist was locked up due to, you know, frankly, a kangaroo court trial in a notorious Sudanese prison.
And as is the case with a lot of these types of folks, a very learned man with a degree from Harvard also worked for a time at the World Bank, which is like the Iron Bank of our Westeros.
I kind of like that comparison. Yeah, that's the World Bank's its own conspiratorial bag of badgers. So we'll put that to the side for now and focus on Ajak. His activism rubbed the power structure the wrong way. So he's in the airport on July 28th, 2018, the Juba International Airport, and he is arrested. He is literally Monopoly style, do not pass go, do not collect $200, shipped off with no warrant, not even a verbal explanation, right? Just get here now, we're taking you. They take him to this place called the Blue House. He doesn't see a judge for quite some time. And when he finally does see a judge, they put him in lockup. And he probably would still be in there if he did not have Western connections, if there weren't various Western powers exerting diplomatic pressure to get him out. He was part of a larger sea change in South Sudan at the time. They said, okay, we're too many people are dissenting, right? They're going against the party line. So the best way for us to do this is either to address these concerns and maybe improve our government, or we just arrest everybody.
Well, yeah, or silence the loudest voice for 17 months, you know, like put him in a hole so he can't foment any more, you know, anger against the current system.
Mm-hmm. And he was released on January 2nd, 2020. But as we'll see in other examples, we don't know how long that release will last. A lot of if you looked at political prisoners on paper, they would look like they had a lot of recidivism, by which we mean going in and out of the prison system. Another example would be Belarus. This is a weird one. You know, Belarus is in the news a little bit more in the West now because of its connection as a vassal state to Russia. But for many people, you don't really think about Belarus. You know, it's far, far away from most folks' experience unless they live in the region or have family in the region. But it is definitely an authoritarian regime run by Alexander Lukashenko, who is the president, technically the president, but functions as a dictator. So this is the case of Maria Kalesnikava. And forgive us, we're not native speakers. Kalesnikava is a political activist fighting the authoritarian regime of Belarus through protest, and she was arrested for a series of mass protests she did in 2020. She organized these. She led them. You may have seen it on the news, actually, because it did make international news. Last year, she got sentenced to 11 years in prison. Western countries, you know, again, they raised Cain about it. But if you look at the Belarusian perspective, you see they don't consider her, you know, like they don't consider her a Bernie Sanders or a Ron Paul or someone who would be considered on just like a different side of a political spectrum. They think she's a spy, dude.
Yeah, essentially working for NATO, right? Do what we need to do to destroy the current regime, or at least discredit it enough to where the NATO powers, the Western powers, would be able to swoop in with their own appointed people, people they choose, to then run the new government. And then they would just be a tool or an arm of NATO.
Mm-hmm. And extract the resources, right? Rinse and repeat.
Crazy.
That's the thing. Like, it's not a story that they originally made up. It's happening right now in Latin America. It's happening on the African continent. You know, the opium wars are another great example in China. The global West has a track record. You know what I mean? So this is, if you are living in Belarus, you can see how that feels like it might have some sand. The problem is that's a very convenient accusation to give someone and to lock them up, because there's not a way to falsify that claim, right? The Western governments that are being accused of this are not going to come out and say, "Oh, dang, guys, you got us. Good game. Good game. Well, we got to have better spies, really. So we'll see you next year. Keep sending your kids to our Ivy League colleges." Right. Which is how some of that does happen.
And the World Bank.
And the World Bank. The Iron Bank of our Westeros. That's a good phrase. So yeah, the West obviously disagrees with this. And something really interesting happened recently. This activist won what's called the Vaclav Havel Human Rights Prize. She won it while she was in prison. And her sister had to accept the award on her behalf. This is a annual award, primarily in Europe. It goes beyond European borders, which gives you the equivalent of like 60,000 euros as the award. And it honors outstanding civil society action in defense of human rights.
I mean, hell, we hear about so many political prisoners doing some of their best writing or best, most influential work while incarcerated.
Yeah, 100%. You know, Nelson Mandela mm-hmm. was a political prisioner as well.
Martin Luther King Jr. Dolly Parton just won $100 million from Bezos.
Stay out of prison, Dolly. We love you. Straight. You know what? Dolly's been through a lot. Maybe it's time she cleans up her act.
I love this notion that she won it, like in a sweepstakes of some kind.
She did. Right. She won this award somehow.
I also think the timing of that news was very interesting, right? Right before Amazon came under fire and had all these massive problems. Also, I'm just going to say it. It's sort of, I want to be the canary in the conspiracy coal mine here.
You're saying it's dangerous to give Dolly Parton $100 million? Like, what is she going to do with it?
She's unhinged. No. She's actually, I'm not just saying this because I have family in Tennessee and she is holding them hostage. I am saying that, you know, she does a lot of good work and is an excellent musician, gives kids free books all the time. There's not much bad you can say about her, but what I'm saying is it's dangerous, in my opinion, for something feels off about Bezos personally giving these awards in a way that I don't know, it paves the way for a private entity supplanting the role of the state. That's why. And look, a lot of private industries have awards, right, that are quite substantial, and I don't know, something feels off about it. But maybe I'm being overly cynical. Anyway.
Sorry Dolly to derail, guys.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. We're not derailed because we are talking about these awards, international awards, can be weaponized, right? They're part of diplomacy. They're meant to make a statement. That's why people get the Nobel Peace Prize, even if, you know, there might have been some better candidates. And like, it was tremendously controversial when former President Barack Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize. And folks abroad were asking some very serious questions about U.S. adventurism abroad, you know, and interventions, right?
What about these drones, bro?
Right. What about the drones? And what about the interventions that don't make the news unless something goes wrong, right? Unless the Black Hawk goes down. So this is weird, because one thing that stands out is Kolesnikova's sister says this is just one of hundreds of political prisoners who are kept in Belarusian jails in awful conditions under what she called false politically motivated accusations. And just these two, South Sudan and Belarus, they're only two examples of a huge, intensely disturbing trend. Authoritarian regimes have always actively locked up dissidents. That's old beans. Everybody knows about that. But now the pattern is accelerating at a pace that has not been seen since the height of the Cold War. The trend also seems set to continue. Things are going to get hairy as the years go on, right? That's not even counting journalists. Right, we mentioned journalists. Woof. The next episode of Most Dangerous Jobs may well need to focus on journalists.
Who is that poor fellow that got beheaded?
Khashoggi.
Also, there was Daniel Pearl, I believe, Wall Street Journal reporter, was beheaded on videotape in Pakistan, and that was that really made a huge international impact because the video was just horrific and was floating out there.
Yeah, and he was beheaded by a terrorist group, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, what is a terrorist group if not sort of a sub-government in and of itself, right? Like in certain countries, you know, they're attempting to take over and they're organized like a government, you know, in terms of their structure.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a really good point. Ultimately, a lot of terrorist groups want to take on the role of the state. Just like a lot of big corporations brought it back. Seriously, be aware, you know, ask yourself why it's possible for someone in South Korea to be A, born in a Samsung hospital, B, have a career where they spend their life working for Samsung, and then C, die and be buried in a Samsung funeral home.
Amazon.
I know. Messages to the void. But journalists are also being targeted increasingly by state-level actors. There are long-standing cases, speculative cases, of journalists being targeted here in the United States, right? Folks like Gary Webb or Danny Casolaro. But there are absolutely proven cases of journalists being targeted in other countries. Ivan Sofronov was just recently, like this year, this past September, ex-journalist sentenced to 22 years in Russian prison due to charges of treason. And then, you know, there's journalists who become faces of political opposition, like Navalny, who is somehow still alive, you know. This is a larger pattern. There's a conspiracy at play, and we found some numbers to support this.
Oh, yeah. We can jump to the Committee to Protect Journalists, who in 2021 found, quote, the number of reporters jailed for their work hit a new global record of 293, which is up from a revised total of 280 in the year 2020.
Which doesn't sound like a lot until you consider these people are not being targeted for their ethnicity. They're not being targeted necessarily for their political activism. They're being targeted based on their profession, right?
You know, it's interesting too. I mean, this is a little bit different, but this case with the WNBA basketball player, Brittany Griner, who was arrested for, you know, what would otherwise likely be a minor infraction with like a vape cartridge or something like that of a THC variety, and is now incarcerated in a Russian penal colony. And because of this person's stature and profession and the conflict in Ukraine politically and our opposition to that, you could argue this is a political prisoner as well. This is a way for a government to kind of thumb their nose at us a bit.
Yeah. And, you know, you see that, like, I was trying to think of a weird example just to put this in perspective. The Committee to Protect Journalists exists because journalists get targeted at this increasing pace. What if the same thing was happening with plumbers? You know, what if there had to be an international nonprofit called the Committee to Protect Plumbers, and they had the statistics on governments targeting, imprisoning, and executing or torturing plumbers? You would rightly think that's messed up, because plumbers don't seem like they should be dangerous. They're doing needful work in a society, in any society, regardless of what that society functions as.
Unless we're talking about Mario and Luigi and you're King Koopa, in which case those are utter terrorists to you, and they need to be dealt with.
So the reason I'm using the plumber example is apply that then to journalists. I wish more folks would admit that journalism is a necessity in civilization. Speaking truth to power, right? That is a necessity just as much as you need plumbers, right? And I think that, first off, I think there's no such thing as a useless job at all. And we shouldn't denigrate people for their professions. We also, probably shouldn't kill them because of those, right? At least in this case. And
well, but there's a reason why it's called the Fourth Estate, at least in this country, the press, right? Because you can wield massive power, and you can enact sea change depending on how many eyes and ears you can get on what you're writing as a journalist, right? I mean, it's a powerful position to have if you've got enough subscribers or readers or clicks or whatever.
Well, also it can be compromised and leveraged. I mean, it's an open secret that, especially before the advent of the internet, the U.S. state had a heavy thumb.
Likes to infiltrate.
Yeah, there we go. Drop it.
Sorry.
So no, it's perfect. It's perfect. I want to hear the rest of the verse. The 24 journalists, at least, were killed as a result of doing their jobs in 2021. 18 others died in circumstances that CPJ called, quote, too murky to determine whether they were specific targets, which is, in plain speech, it's them saying, we can't prove this, but we're putting them on this list. And just like that accelerating trend of arresting political activists, this trend of detaining or murdering journalists seems set to escalate. Governments across the world, regardless of what you think of them, are all aware that there is going to be an increasing struggle in the coming decades because the consequences of past generations' activities are going to hit heavy. It's already happening. And they need to maintain their grip on the levers of power. You know, like that's the most important thing. If you are a dictator, you keep your people on several steady diets. You make sure they're fed. You make sure that they are fed food to keep them alive and working and loyal, right? Make sure they know they owe that food to you. And you make sure you feed them a diet of information that is curated, right? So you have to be able to maintain a certain level of stability. What do you do when there are massive waves of climate refugees, right? Leaving your place or coming into your border. What do you do when the arable land starts disappearing? What do you do when you just can't find fish in the ocean? It's happening. It's happening. They're aware of it. And I believe that's part of the reason why we're seeing these lockdowns, coupled with the massive flow of information, right? That just didn't exist ever before. I mean, I guess a version of it existed when there were like maybe 12,000 humans and they were all roughly in the same place and they could like kind of communicate with, you know, maybe that's like the first Twitter. I don't know. But now there are 8 billion, a number which will decline, by the way. Let's talk about some, who are our top journalist haters?
According to the numbers, it's China, right?
Yeah, God, we're not going to get past customs, man. I don't know if we get to do a tour in China.
Well, we're not journalists, so we're just guys talking on mics.
Right, and hopefully that's not a crime? I think it depends on what you say. So, yeah, for the third year in a row, as of 2021, China has been the worst jailer of journalists. And that's, I think last year, 50 were locked up, again, for doing their jobs.
But Mexico is probably the most dangerous place for journalists. I remember we read a story about that not long ago, that in certain cities, being a journalist was one of the most dangerous occupations you could have.
Yeah, especially in places where the cartels are increasingly supplanting the state, right? They're not going to lock you up. They're just going to kill you, and perhaps in a slow way to set an example, right? So China is locking them up, and I have a theory about this. I want to see what you guys think. So 3 years in a row, I believe it's probably an accelerated trend due to COVID and the centralized power structure clamping down on coverage of COVID, you know, when whole cities were being shut down, when people were starving in their apartment buildings because they were physically not allowed outside. Journalists reporting on that further foment domestic dissent. And they also spread the news, right? If someone's trying to control the news and you don't want people in nearby city B to know that city A just got locked down, right? And to reasonably expect that they'll be next on the list, then you want to get rid of the people who could tell city B.
Yeah. Or you don't want people to know the economic bottom is falling out, right? When it comes to let's build infrastructure everywhere as much as we can whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, who else is on the list? Who else?
Well, Myanmar actually jumped to the second spot in the list after a media crackdown there that followed its February 1st military coup. Then you have Egypt, Vietnam, and Belarus, which came up earlier in the episode, respectively, rounding out the top five positions.
And, you know, depending on what happens in the next, I don't know, months, years, Russia might be up there. As somebody else, like in opposition force to Russia, and one of these Western countries might be up there. Who knows? Because in that kind of conflict, control of information becomes highly, highly crucial.
Yeah, yeah. You know who probably won't get on that list? Saudi Arabia. Because the kingdom is already established. It's not about locking the journalists up. Why not just kill them? Set an example. And especially that trend will likely accelerate because nobody did anything. There were no real consequences to the kingdom.
Well, the kingdom is arguing that they did nothing wrong, right? I just saw a piece on that. Just saw that.
Yeah. I don't know which direction we should go with that future episode. But I'm thinking, you know, what we're doing here is we're touching on a lot of things that are episodes of their own in the future. Let's take a pause for a word from our sponsor, and we're going to return and talk about one of the most complicated cases of recent political prisoners.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more,
while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Okay, it's a tough job to be president, right? It's a tough job to be prime minister. You have heard us go on record before saying we don't want those jobs. Most reasonable people, in fact, do not, I would imagine. But imagine being a prisoner 1 year, a prime minister or president the next, and then after a few more years, going back in prison. This is the story of Aung San Suu Kyi, the Burmese politician, diplomat, winner of the 1991 Nobel Peace Prize, who, depending on the year, is either leading the government of Myanmar or imprisoned by the government of Myanmar.
Yeah, Suu Kyi spent nearly 15 years in prison or in detention between 1989 and 2010. All this due to her personal struggle to bring democracy to the then military-ruled Myanmar, which is also known as Burma. And she really became kind of a Nelson Mandela figure in terms of an international symbol of peaceful resistance in the face of oppressive regimes.
Yeah, and you can just search the name on your browser of choice, and you will see how far back this roller coaster goes. She has been, like, this person was born in 1945, back when Myanmar was still called Burma. And she came to her position based partially on her lineage. She's the youngest daughter of Aung San, who is considered the father of modern day Myanmar. And she has been involved on the national stage in a big way since the 1980s. She was in the what's called the 88 Uprising, because it was August 8th, 1988. Then she became a general secretary of a party called the NLD, and things were looking pretty good for them for a while. That party in the elections in 1990 won the majority of seats in parliament. 81%. So picture in the U.S., picture the idea of 80% of Congress being Democratic or Republican. It's an incredible majority, right? And it seems to reflect the will of the voters, until the military came in and said, shut this party down. You know what I mean? Stop everything. And they did. They put her on house arrest, and then for like over a period of 1989 to 2010, in that time period, she was locked up in her own house for 15 years, on and off. And this made her one of the world's most prominent political prisoners. People have tried to kill her multiple times. She gets out of prison. She ascends to power. The military comes back in, locks her up. The most recent news, she was arrested on February of last year, most recently, along with other members of the NLD party. Oh, that's National League for Democracy. Sorry. And the military just keeps calling the elections ginned up and fraudulent when they don't win.
Hmm. Sounds familiar. It could happen here.
And this is something that, you know, you probably heard the name a lot in the West, but I think this story is full of deep strangeness. The story of Myanmar itself. I mean, there are a lot of reports and criticisms, especially regarding her stance on the genocide of the Rohingya, right, or the massacre thereof, that seem to indicate she might not be entirely the hero Western media portrays her as. We're not saying she's a villain. We're saying there's more to the story, almost always with these kind of figures. It reminded me a little bit of Mother Teresa, who for decades and decades, right, was regarded as an almost supernatural force of benevolence until the real story started to come out.
Yeah.
And again, this is not at all saying that Aung San Suu Kyi is a bad faith actor or anything like that. It's just, I think we need to do an entire episode on this political prisoner in particular. What do you guys think?
For sure. You know, I want to do a whole episode on is he used to be called H. Rat Brown. Oh, I'm going to have to rap my brain to figure out Jamal Abdullah Al-Amin. Jamal Al-Amin. Really fascinating case. And it's based here in Atlanta. I think we should do an episode on that because he's been in prison for a while, but it seems like maybe he didn't do what he's accused of, and it's kind of a known thing, but he's still in prison.
I'm just looking at it now. Not pretty recently. So he's been convicted of shooting two deputies in the year 2000.
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. We want to learn more about this. And here's another tricky curveball. We wanted to make this episode a little bit shorter because we're saving a lot for future shows. Folks, this kind of stuff gets tricky very quickly because, believe it or not, even now in 2022, there is no single internationally recognized legal definition of a political prisoner, which means you can just take someone prisoner as a result of them doing something you don't like. And you can say, this isn't a rival politician. This is not an activist. This is a spy, says Belarus. This is a traitor, says Russia. This is a terrorist, says China.
Do people still say dissident? Is that sort of too buzzy?
People still say dissident, but usually people who say dissident are supporters of the dissidents.
Mm-hmm. Because if you say it on the official side, that's almost giving it some legitimacy in a way. It's better to call it something else, kind of.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. Like how you can always tell when the West doesn't like a country or a government because they don't call it a government. They call it a regime, mm-hmm. you know.
Exactly.
And the U.S. is a big fan of doing that whenever somebody goes too far left in Latin America. Mm. Right.
Sort of the cult versus religion argument.
Yes. This reminds me of that documentary, The Taxi Driver. You guys remember that one? It was the prisoners that were being held in Guantanamo Bay and how there was this concerted effort to pay people in Afghanistan to like snitch on other people. So they would get picked up and taken over there or to Abu Ghraib or somewhere else like that. And it's a story about this taxi driver. There's literally just a taxi driver who got accused by these people who wanted to make a buck from Uncle Sam. And they're like, yeah, this is a bad guy. So he became a essentially political prisoner or a prisoner of war.
Yeah. And that's, there's a lot of human error too with those things, because they were incentivizing people to maybe falsely accuse folks. And then also people were getting detained and disappeared because their names were similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like if someone found, you know, like maybe they're looking for someone called Broll Noun and Fat Medrick, and my name won't work for this. I just realized that. But, you know, they arrest someone who just has the letters transposed, right? Yeah. We're finally arresting actor Tom Arnold, but unfortunately we got some guy named Tim. It's too late now. Off to Guantanamo.
Or just some other guy literally named Tom Arnold.
Or to, yeah, there's no, wait, so that's many a way of better those, example.
You know what I mean?
There like, are a lot. There are a lot.
There's so many Matt Fredericks. If one of us does something wrong, we all got to look out.
See, that's why I tell other people named Ben. You know what I mean? We got to move as a unit. But honestly, this is an incredibly dangerous trend because it is dangerously convenient for people in power. It helps you avoid accountability. You can make examples of opposition. You can further consolidate your position, especially, again, for the chaos that is on the way in your lifetime, folks. And maybe the most important part of this episode, our ending thought before we return to future shows on this subject, is simply this. And please listen closely, Western conspiracy realist. In the words of our pal Robert Evans, it could happen here. And on that ominous note, we're going to call it today. It's a Friday. As we're recording this, we hope your day and your holiday season is going well as we round out the end of 2002. We're off to some adventures of our own. I mean, you guys got anything going on Thanksgiving-wise?
Just hanging with the fam, man.
Fam hangs.
Oh, fam hangs. Hopefully it's enjoyable for everybody. And we can't wait to hear your thoughts on political prisoners, on some of the cases we mentioned, on other cases you think your fellow listeners should know. So please read us on to those projects. We want to be easy to find online.
Correct. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at the handle Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
We also have a phone number. It is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, you've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your voice and name on the air. If you don't like using a phone to talk to people with your mouth, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we
are underway, the Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.